Hello, good evening again. Is there anyone here tonight who hasn't been to one of the first two classes? Okay. So tonight is the third class of five in the learning the practice of mindfulness. And tonight I want to speak about what's called the right attitude for practice. And you'll remember that in practicing mindfulness, what we're doing is trying to remember to recognize the present moment's experience. We're not trying to create some special effects. We're not trying to avoid anything. We just want to settle into the present moment and be with it and know that we're experiencing it. So mindfulness is not about creating any spiritual experience. It's not about fulfilling any agenda or having any set goal other than just to be present, to recognize what your immediate experience is moment after moment. But as we do that, as we hear the instruction to be present, be aware of, remember to recognize your present moment's experience, we can hear that and get pretty exercised about it. Like, you know, we really get energized, and we've heard a lot about different kinds of meditation, so we have these assumptions of what we're supposed to do, or we've have these ideas of what we're supposed to do, and we got to do something. And so we sit a certain way, and we hold our hands a certain way, and we hold our mind a certain way, and that's what I want to speak about tonight. The energy with which we practice. What kind of attitude in the mind do we want to have when we try to practice? Because, you know, sometimes we can try too hard and we're just, you know, really get excited and we're just looking at the present moment, whatever that is, something happening in the body, something happening in our mind, and we can get kind of tight and tense and really wound up. Or we can just kind of settle back and say, well, relax the body, relax the mind, and just kind of snooze cruise, you know, not doing anything. So somewhere between trying too hard and not doing anything is the right balance. But it's not always easy to discover that for ourselves, to really know, oh, this is the right effort, this is the right way, this is the right attitude of mind, this is the right posture of the mind to have. And so when I talk about what is the right attitude for practicing being mindful, I'm talking about what is the skillful frame of mind? How should you hold the whole intention to practice? Because remember, we're just trying to be mindful. We're just trying to recognize the present moment. And as long as I'm narrating to you what to pay attention to, like, you know, just feel your posture, let the body settle into the sitting posture, it's easy to do. You can follow the instructions and you just do it. You just pay attention in that way. But when you're doing it on your own, so to speak, or you're trying to remember the instructions for yourself, sometimes we kind of scramble around, we try too hard, we don't know if we're doing it right, we feel less confident, and the mind can get pretty unsettled. So we want to remind ourselves that all we're doing really is just paying attention. So just paying attention, and whatever you notice is okay. You can notice what the body feels like, you can notice what the mind is doing, you can notice different experiences of the environment, how you experience the room. It doesn't really matter what you're paying attention to. If that's what you're attending to, if that's what you're feeling, if that's what you're experiencing, then, and you know that, then you're being mindful. And we practice this mindfulness in order to learn about ourselves. Because in every question, in every moment, I should say, there's this question that arises in the mind, in every moment. Is this okay? Is this moment's experience okay? Can I be with this experience? Do I have to fix it? Do I have to judge it? Do I have to get rid of it? Do I like it? Do I dislike it? And the mind is constantly monitoring our experience. And so we want to, you know, take that kind of a natural activity of mind and make it part of our practice. And even enhance it. And just ask yourself, when you become aware of the present moment's experience, just ask yourself, okay, is this okay? Is it okay to be experiencing this feeling in the body? Is it okay to be experiencing this feeling in the mind? Is it okay to be restless, to be agitated, to be fearful, to be anxious? Well, oftentimes it isn't. We don't feel like it's okay. We get disturbed, we get upset. So we just want to be aware of that, that in every moment we're really asking ourselves, okay, can I be with this experience? What's the mind's reaction to it? Because if the mind gets upset, then we're upset. You know, we don't like it. We get fearful, we get agitated, we get bored, we get anxious, we get depressed, we get impatient. And when we feel that way about our experience, then we try harder. We try harder to fix it, to get rid of it, to explain it, to justify it. And all the while, the mind is just chattering away, and we're not really being very present. So when we talk about right attitude of mind, we're resting on the understanding that we're just noticing what's happening, and we're learning about ourselves. How is the mind relating to, or reacting to, or responding to the present moment situation? And we ask ourselves, can I accept this? Can the mind accept this? Does the mind like this? Does the mind dislike it? Is it okay? So when we give the instruction, you know, we say something like, okay, just settle into the body and relax. And we say, okay, you know, let me just relax the body. And for the most part, we know how to relax the body. But then when I say to relax the mind, we've been at work all day, or we've been busy all day, and the mind's been task-oriented, and it's really wound up, and it's maybe stressed, maybe it's tired, maybe it's very agitated. And we think, relax the mind? How do you do that? It's not easy to know. And so we just have to kind of hear that and just see what the mind does when you ask your mind to relax. We just say, okay, relax. Let go. Just let go of whatever's filling the mind. Whatever agenda, whatever task you've given it, whatever drama is going on, can we just let it recede into the background of the mind rather than be on the front burner just boiling away? And when we do that, then we can begin to really settle into the present moment, really accept the present moment, seeing what it is, seeing what the body is feeling, and knowing what the mind is doing. And we can see if the mind is disturbed or agitated. But the effort to do that doesn't need to be too energetic. We just need to be aware that all we're doing is paying attention. We're just asking ourselves, am I willing to open to an experience this moment? And what is this moment's experience? Okay. Sometimes it's pleasant. We like that. So we recognize, oh, this is pleasant. It's nice to finally be still for a moment today. Oh, we like that. We notice in the mind this tendency to go, yeah, I like that. I hope this lasts. Or we settle in and we're paying attention to the mind and we realize, wow, I'm really wound up. I'm carrying a lot of unfinished conversations from the day's work, and it was a scramble to get here, and the body is just racing and the mind is racing, and wow, we think, oh, this is too much. Well, we just notice that. In either case, we don't need to fix it. We don't need to fix the mind that is overwhelmed, or the mind that is just relieved to be sitting. You just have to recognize, oh, this is a feeling of relief. Okay. This is a feeling of being wound up. Okay. And can we be with either of those with the same quality of mind, not preferring one to the other? Now we say, just be with experience in an open, receptive way, without any preference to whether it's pleasant or not. Easy to say, hard to do. Because when it's pleasant, we like it. When it's unpleasant, we don't like it. So it takes some monitoring, some reminding ourselves, okay, whatever's going on, it's okay. Can I accept that this is the way it is for me for now? And sometimes that's a good little mantra to kind of put at the end of your experience. This is the way it is for now. Because, you know, things change. And while it may not be very pleasant to experience right now, well, it's just for now. And that can be a good support for momentarily or temporarily accepting what you might think is just intolerable. I can't stand it. And when we can't stand it, or when we think, I can't stand this, you know, the body's just too tired, too wound up, the mind is too anxious, it's too fearful, it's too whatever, we scramble. You know, the mind just scrambles. We want to get away from it. We want to fix it. We want to stop it. We want to jump out of our skin. That's what it feels like. And so we need to remind ourselves that these experiences arise due to causes and conditions, mostly beyond our immediate control, and yet we can be with them. If we can be aware of them, we can learn how to be with them. Pleasant or unpleasant, we're not trying to fix it, we're not trying to create something different, something special. And we don't need to have any agenda, so to speak, of what to do with this experience. We can just assume that it's okay to experience. It'll be here for a while and it'll change. You know, there isn't any of us that sits for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half hour that doesn't experience a whole range of pleasant and unpleasant physical, mental, emotional stuff. Life is a very dynamic activity. The mind is moving all the time and so is the body. And all we're doing is paying attention to that. Learning how to be at ease with the way the body is, the way the mind is, moment after moment. One of the attitudes of mind to bring to practice is just to ask yourself, am I willing to be here? Am I willing to just experience this? Even as you sit and listen to the talk, are you willing to just drop into the body and feel what the body feels like? Are you willing to ask yourself, what's going on in the mind? I'm bored, I'm excited, I'm curious, I'm sleepy. Whatever it is okay. Whatever you experience, ever, is okay. But sometimes we need to give ourselves permission to actually acknowledge, to feel that, and to acknowledge that. So a willingness, bringing a willingness to our experience, allows the mind to open, to really welcome, if you will, to welcome and to receive the present moment's experience. Sometimes we're on guard, you know. Life is kind of challenging at times. And we have a lot of armor, we have a lot of barriers, we have a lot of protection to kind of keep ourselves from getting too overwhelmed or too stressed. And sometimes we just don't feel. We don't feel much because we're kind of keeping things at bay just to get through the day. And then when we come to mindfulness practice, we say, relax and open up and allow yourself to feel everything that you've been keeping out all day. While we may want to do that, it takes some confidence that this is the right thing to do, that this is what it is that we're trying to do, and that there's a benefit in doing it. And when we're able to do that, when we're able to at least have the right attitude of mind, or have the right posture of the mind, or the right state of mind in practice, then we're not demanding, we're not expecting, we don't have any hopes, we don't have any appointments. We're just willing to just see what the present moment brings. One of the experiences I had when I first started practice, I mentioned, I think the first night, that the first retreat I went on was, it was unexpected. I didn't know I was going on a retreat. I didn't know anybody who meditated. I didn't know I was going to meditate. I was living in a commune at the time, and when I got to the retreat, and it was a 2-week retreat, and they told us what we were going to be doing, sitting and walking alternate hours for about 14 hours a day for 2 weeks. I was like stunned. But I'd heard, you know, that, you know, meditation, right? I at least knew that meditation, you know, things could happen. And I didn't know it. I didn't recognize it at the time. But I thought, or I had this assumption, that there was going to be some sort of spiritual goodie from practice. I thought, I don't really know what it is. Either it's going to be calm or ecstatic, or it's going to be like doing drugs or something. And it's going to be different. And that was kind of a background anticipation or expectation, or maybe it was a hope, that if I do this right, I'll have some special effects in practice. And so I was constantly looking at my practice through the lens of, is this special enough yet? And it wasn't. Believe me, it wasn't. It was painful, it was restless, it was a struggle. But at one point in that 2 weeks, I did have some calmness, some relaxation, a kind of an open spaciousness where things were just at ease. I was at ease with the way things were, and there was a sense of calmness and clarity, and I was so excited by it. Of course, that excitement totally ruined it, but nevertheless, I went to my next check-in with one of the teachers, and, you know, they say, well, how's it going? And I said, oh, wow, I had this great sitting. You know, it was so calm, it was so clear, and it was so open, so spacious, it was really nice. And he looks at me and said, what goes up? Right. What goes up must come down. He didn't say must come down, but I knew, because that was my experience. More recently, one of my students said, you know, there's nothing, on a retreat, she said, there's nothing like a good sitting to ruin the rest of your day. And that's because if you have a good sitting, you expect it, or you look for it, or you anticipate it in the next sitting. And we rarely see this expectation, or we rarely see this anticipation, or we rarely see this assumption that if it was like this last time, it would be like this time. And so these attitudes of mind with which we practice, they're pretty elusive. They're pretty subtle, actually. And so we need to ask ourselves, you know, as we're practicing, what's my attitude of mind? How am I practicing? Are there some expectations here? Is there some anticipation? Am I trying to make something happen? Am I hoping that something doesn't happen? And so when we are looking for the attitude of mind, or at least asking ourselves, we're more likely to recognize when it's unskillful. We may not be able to establish the skillful attitude of mind, which is open, allowing, receptive, non-judgmental, patient, willing, waiting, observing. These are all the, let's say, the skillful attitudes of mind to bring to practice. Hard to remember them all, let alone to do them. And so when we just ask ourselves what attitude of mind is present, we'll see, oh yeah, there's a willingness, there's an openness, there's some expectation, or there's some anticipation, or some chagrin, or whatever it is. And that's important to recognize, so that we don't just practice with an attitude of struggling, trying to make something happen, or really disappointed or frustrated that it's not happening because we didn't see that we had an expectation. So it's an important question to ask ourselves. What's the attitude of mind with which I'm practicing? Because when we ask ourselves that question, we'll recognize, we'll begin to get a sense of, oh yeah, I'm tight, I'm tense, I'm agitated, or there's some expectation in the mind. And then we can let it go. We can see that and just put it aside and just settle back into, no, that's not necessary. All I'm doing is asking, what's the present moment's experience? And is it okay to be with it? Sometimes, though, having heard, as many of us have before we even start practice, we've heard about practice, we've talked to other people who practice, we've read books about meditation, and we have picked up a lot of assumptions, we picked up a lot of information which may or may not be useful, we maybe have some expectation, we maybe have a lot of doubt about it, a doubt about ourselves, and so sometimes when we get to actually practice, we have all kinds of unrecognized assumptions about how it should be. And in our practice, if we don't ask ourselves, what assumptions am I bringing to practice? Or what is it that I think is supposed to be happening? Or how is this supposed to be happening? If we don't ask ourselves that question, then often they will operate in the background, controlling the way we practice, you know, interfering really with the way we practice. And so we want to look at or even just ask ourselves, or at least be aware that sometimes we make a project out of practice, or we have an agenda in our practice, or we have some just wrong ideas about practice, wrong attitudes in practice. Sometimes when we hear, you know, the instruction, we make it into the goal. The goal being to, sometimes, you know, you'll hear the instruction to observe the breath, or to pay attention to the in-breath and the out-breath, very common instruction. And we get the idea that that's the practice. And we struggle, or we strive, or we try to become perfect technician. This is the technique, do it perfectly, that's the goal. But it's not. It's a technique. It's a tool for learning how to recognize and be with the present moment's experience. It's just a tool. Sometimes we, you know, occasionally it happens that we put on our spiritual persona when we come to meditate, or when we come to a class, or we come to a retreat, and we put on our spiritual athletic uniform on our mind. And we get this idea that somehow we're doing some spiritual gig that we have to be really athletic about. Again, it can be a very subtle but controlling wrong attitude of mind in our practice, or I should say an unskillful attitude of mind in practice. Sometimes, and many people who do come to practice have, some of us are therapists or counselors of one sort or another, or have been in therapy or counseling of one sort or another, and sometimes it's easy to conflate the working on our personal issues with practice. We don't have to bring any issue to practice. We don't have to come knowing that we're going to be working on our father issues, our mother issues, our relationship issues, our whatever you've got issues with. You don't have to have any agenda like that. You don't have to have any emotional baggage. You don't have to bring any of it with you. If it's there, of course, you'll see it. It'll come up, and you'll get to see it. But we want to be careful about having an agenda in practice to work on our emotional or psychological issues. They may come up, and we'll see them. We get to work with them. But we don't need that as an agenda in practice. Other ways that we kind of contaminate the clarity or the skillfulness of our practice, ways that we contaminate it is we have this idea that we got to figure out what's going on. Why am I having this kind of experience? You know, a lot of our educational training is to learn how to solve problems. And we ask the question, why, a lot. We observe something, and we say, now, why is it happening that way? If it's pleasant, we want to know why so we can have more of it. If it's unpleasant, we want to know why so we can have less of it, or not get into it again. And so a lot of our conditioning, a lot of our mental cogitation is around problem solving. And sometimes when we come to practice, that conditioning, that problem-solving habit of mind takes over. And whatever we're experiencing in the body, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, whatever we're experiencing in the mind, pleasant or unpleasant, we treat as if it was a problem to be figured out. Okay, why is this happening? And how do I either make it happen less or make it happen more? And when you find yourself treating your experience like it's a problem to solve, you can be sure that your mind is really caught up and really entangled. And so just to notice that, oh, this is problem solving, or this is figuring out. And they're just habits of mind, which of course we need. We have developed these habits of mind because we need them in our life, in order to make the decisions that we need to make, in order to do our jobs, raise our kids, write our books, ride our bike, fix our bikes, whatever it is you got to do, we need to know how to do that. But mindfulness is not that. Mindfulness is just observing the way things are without trying to explain it, without trying to fix it, without making it a problem, without being overwhelmed with it. But just to notice and recognize things are the way they are. A couple of other attitudes or unskillful states of mind in our practice is feeling that we have to get rid of unpleasant experience so that when the body feels uncomfortable, we may judge our practice as not being right or not being good because the body's uncomfortable. Well, judging our practice based on the quality of pleasant or unpleasantness is really not productive, because there are going to be pleasant and unpleasant experiences for the rest of your life. But that isn't an indication of your practice or the quality of your practice. Sometimes the best practice, the best effort, the best continuity, the best really working skillfully with the way things are is when it's really unpleasant. Well, the mind can be really unpleasant, the body can be really unpleasant, and yet there's a real willingness to be with it in a non-reactive way. And so the continuity of awareness can be very, have a lot of momentum, and it can be a lot of understanding of what's going on, and it can be very unpleasant. And sometimes when experience is very pleasant, and the body's just really at ease, and the mind is really happy, we just kind of sink into a stupor where we just kind of like cruising along, kind of numb. And the mindfulness is really not very clear, and not very continuous, and not very sharp. We don't learn that much. So we want to be careful not to evaluate our practice and the quality of practice based on whether the experience is pleasant or unpleasant. And another common experience is feeling dissatisfied. We can't help but have some hope or expectation that when we sit and pay attention and try to be mindful or meditate, that something good is going to happen. Somehow we're going to calm down, we're going to be clear. It's just going to be something different than what we've been experiencing all day. And often, it's not that noticeably better. You know, the mind is restless, the body aches, the mind is tired, and we subtly or not so subtly, feel dissatisfied. Like, this doesn't work, or this isn't what I expect, or this isn't what I want. And so, asking ourselves, well, what is actually going on here? Oh, feeling dissatisfied. Okay, when we feel dissatisfied, can you let that be okay? Are you willing to feel dissatisfied without doing anything about it? Frankly, if you can learn to recognize the feeling of being dissatisfied and not have to do anything about it, you'll be really happy. I know that sounds like a kind of an oxymoron, but it's not reacting to it, not thinking that you've got to fix it, that you've got to be satisfied, that you've got to do something better, or the experience has to change. Because when you're not struggling with the way things are, you're at ease. So even if the experience, the way things are, is unpleasant, if you're not struggling with it, it's okay. And so that's really the attitude of mind that we want to bring to practice. Am I willing to experience it, to acknowledge it as it is, observe it for as long as it is happening? And am I willing to let it be there? Let it be okay? Knowing full well that it'll change sooner or later. So after my first retreat, where I was practicing for some sort of spiritual goody, looking for a high, and not having much success, I settled into a number of years of practicing where I liked sitting. I really liked sitting. I didn't read any Dharma books. I listened to the talks, and that was good enough, but I wasn't really a scholar of any sort, and I just liked sitting. And I did a number of retreats over a number of years like that until I got, I think it was in my seventh year of doing retreats, when this Burmese monk came to teach. Sayadaw Upandita came to the States to offer a retreat, and I got to participate. And my idea of practice at that time was just sit. If you just sit, you know, eventually it'll happen. It being, well, waking up or being free or getting enlightened or whatever it is, it would happen. And So I was practicing, and somewhere in the middle of the retreat, Sayadaw Pandita asked me, he says, well, what do you think is supposed to happen, you know, in practice? And I told him, I said, well, I just sit and, you know, I guess it'll just happen. And he just laughed because it was so naive, and it was so, actually, I was doing nothing but just sitting kind of inert. I really wasn't paying attention, and maybe at the most I was doing was thinking. But I really wasn't paying attention, and this was after 7 years, excuse me, I'm a slow learner. But because he questioned me, what is your assumption about practice? What do you think you're supposed to be doing here? Then I realized, oh, I never knew. I didn't know. I was just sitting there doing nothing, really. But you know what? I needed that. I needed to let my mind calm down and just get familiar with itself without any agenda. And then later, I was able to practice with more skill. But initially, it was really not really working at the practice and just kind of hoping or having a naive belief that somewhere it'll just happen even without me. Not happening. So a couple of years after I first met Sayadaw Pandita, I decided to go to Burma. And at that point, I'd really gotten very enthused. I was so on fire to figure out and to know and to get the benefit of this practice that I was just inflamed with confidence, energy, and inspiration. So I got to Burma, and even in the first few days of being in Burma, Upandita said to me, well, don't you want to go to town and see the pagodas and things like that? I said, no, I'm not interested. I just want to sit here and practice. And for several months of practice, I was so enthusiastic and so excited and so inspired and just so intent on being there and practicing that I was overlooking anything subtler than that. It was a burnout. I mean, I was so wound up and so overexcited, trying too hard, striving way, way, way too hard, that I wasn't doing that well, or I wasn't that balanced in my practice. And so in my early monastic years, I was so enthusiastic and so excited that my interest and my excitement was interfering with the natural unfolding of the mind. Okay, now you can see I've been swinging from I don't know, I'm looking for a high, to I don't do anything for a few years. Now I'm trying too hard for several months. Eventually, you know, to get from one to the other, you've got to cross the midpoint. And eventually I began to notice, hey, wait a minute, there's some place in there where I'm not trying too hard and I'm not yet kind of just hanging out. Somewhere in there, there's a space of a little more balance, a little more paying attention without any agenda and seeing the way things are. And that's the way I kind of stumbled on a more balanced way of practice. Meaning, I began to practice with a more balanced mind. Not that my practice was well balanced, but my effort in practice was more balanced. And this is what I'm talking about when I'm talking and pointing to our attitude of mind that we bring to practice. Are we too excited? Are we too lethargic or too unmotivated? It's important to ask the question, what attitude of mind am I bringing to practice? Or what attitudes of mind? And to see if we can be open, receptive, allowing, waiting, patient, or is there some other agenda in mind? When we sit, I'll give you some instruction in how to attend to the attitudes of the mind. Do you have any attitudes of mind to share? Yeah. Nobody gets through practice without having a lot of wrong attitudes of mind to share.
Yeah, you've asked me to tell a story tonight about the wrong attitude, and you know, I feel like I'm talking about the struggles in practice. That's a good thing. I think that's where you learn. But a while back, I was actually doing a retreat in Hong Kong, and it was in kind of this remote area out in the countryside. It was kind of outside of the main city center, and it's pretty rustic. There's just monasteries that dot the hillside in this forested area, and very kind of misty. It felt like it was from like another time. It was really interesting. So I arrived there at the center. I'm going to be there for 2 weeks. I've got my backpack, you know, my meditation cushion, protein bars. And I've got the essentials kind of covered, you know, ready to do my practice. And It's night two, and I'm in this kind of concrete kind of bunker where there's about 10 other yogis sleeping in the same room. And it must have been around 1 or 2 a.m., and I start to hear what sounds like kind of paper rustling, or like getting crumpled. And it's sort of dead silent, except for this little kind of crumpling sound. And so I switch on my headlamp, and I left my backpack on the floor, and there's a rat there that's about the size of my forearm, you know, just going to town on my protein bars and just looking at me, but you know, not really caring too much, going right back to work. And so, I was kind of looking around, is no one else noticing this? The rat is kind of doing its business, and so I kind of tried to, you know, shoo it off, and it disappeared. It went through some hole in the wall as I fell back asleep. But then I woke up to the rat actually running across my body and then going up my arm, and it somehow made its way up in the top bunk. And I didn't know really what to do, and I'm sitting there, and I start to hear some munching sound. And so I popped out of bed with my headlamp, and it had completely opened up my meditation cushion, and I was just feasting on the buckwheat, you know, in my, you know, I'm really attached to this cushion, and it was kind of tragic. And so, you know, I got some fitful sleep, as you can imagine. And the next morning, I inspected the area, you know, just kind of seeing the damage that was done. And there was just rat poop all over my clothes, my food, you know. And then slowly this attitude of mine started kind of creeping in, you know. And I noticed that, you know, I started to get a little agitated, and there started to be these judgments about the center. And I started having thoughts like, you know, these conditions, I can't practice here. You know, I need to do something about these conditions. And so I started, you know, talking with some of the yogis and saying, you know, the rat just kind of went all over my stuff. It's eating my food. And this attitude was kind of unchecked. And I was kind of acting it out, you know, trying to sort of enlist the yogis' help to take care of the rats and the creatures. And so before you know it, you know, people were getting involved trying to trap the rat and trying to get rid of the rat and setting cages. And so it caused this whole kind of tizzy, you know, amongst some of the yogis. And the kind of the wake-up call was that evening, you know, I was having a cup of Ovaltine with one of the yogis there who lived in kind of southeast China. And he was talking about, I mentioned the rat, and he started laughing and in a very good-natured way. And I kind of asked him, what's so funny? And he said, well, he's like, you know, I come from the countryside. You know, these are part of my life. You know, they live in my hut, and they sometimes feast on the walls of my hut because the hut is made out of animal skin. And, you know, I've just gotten used to them, and they don't really do too much harm. And he just kind of has a twinkle in his eye, and he starts laughing. And it was at that moment I realized this attitude that had crept into my mind, and all day I had just been resisting and fighting and criticizing the center, saying, you know, once conditions are right, then I can practice. And it was seeing the way this guy kind of held rats with kind of a lighthearted, open, inclusive way, with even a sense of humor. It's like, oh, this guy, he's got the right attitude. And so that was kind of the adjustment that I needed, just kind of hearing his response and seeing his response to, you know, to the animal issue, and kind of that helped me kind of make peace with the rats and the bugs and the mosquitoes and the different creatures that, you know, sharing the center with. And but yeah, you know, the attitude is really pretty sneaky, you know, it just kind of sneaks in like a mist, and it's kind of hard to notice sometimes, but man, it really kind of guided, you know, my relating to others that whole day. And so, you know, it was kind of a wake-up call that evening. Made the appropriate adjustments. Yeah. kept going.
It is amazing how
we can be caught up in total, you know, disruptive mind state by something that's going on in the center or in the retreat or in ourselves or in our life, and not see it. Just not even recognize that our practice is way off base, you know, totally consumed by this other thing that's going on, until, you know, like that, somebody just, you see somebody else who has a totally different attitude about it, and you realize, wow, I've really been caught up in it. Yeah. So, maybe we should sit for a while. If you want to stand and stretch for a bit, and then we'll sit, and I'll narrate. So as we begin the sitting practice, or awareness while sitting, just let yourself settle into your posture, your sitting posture, whether you're in a chair, a bench, cushion. Just feel the body coming to a natural stillness, settling on to the sitting bones, finding a place of ease and comfort in the sitting posture. Again, letting your attention flow throughout the body. And if you come across any areas of tension or holding, and just gently release around the shoulders, the eyes, the jaw, hands. And now that we're sitting, we recognize the natural stillness of the body. Just take notice of how you experience the environment of the room. Noticing how you feel the temperature of the room. A little warm, a little cool, just right. Just acknowledging that to yourself. Noticing also the sounds that occur in the room or outside the room. Recognizing how spontaneously they're heard. We don't have to do anything special to hear sounds that occur. It just happens. You may recognize the silence in which the sounds seem to appear. And just as we take notice of the interior physical experience, the exterior physical experience, we want to also take notice of the mind. What is the flavor of the mind? How is the mind feeling? Or what is the weather pattern in the mind right now? Mind feel interested, excited, calm, relieved. We're just acknowledging the way it is right now. And recalling that now the practice of mindfulness is to remember, to recognize the present moment's experience and the fact that it's being known. And so you can just remind yourself that in every moment, something is being known. Breathing in, being known. Sounds are being known. Other sensations in the body are being known. If you're familiar with and you want to steady the attention on a single object like the breath, that's okay. Or if you're more familiar with changing objects and just allowing your attention to notice what it will, that's okay too. But in either case, notice what attitudes of mind are present. Is there an open, receptive, allowing space in the mind? Is there some expectation or anticipation or irritation? Attending to the present moment as it unfolds moment by moment. Feeling our way from moment to moment. Recognizing what this experience is that's being known. And seeing if there's any reaction in the mind. Is there any judgment? I like it, I don't like it. Is there any confusion about what it is? Can we just allow sounds to be heard, sensations to be felt? Thoughts to be known. Recognizing the awareness of them moment by moment. So what is being known will change. Sounds, the sensations, the thoughts, the feelings, moods. What we're tending to, or developing here, is the recognition of the awareness. Is there an awareness of this moment? What is being known? Not so important. There'll always be something. But what's more important is the recognition of the awareness. Stillness is being known. The awareness is doing the knowing. Awareness is knowing the sounds that occur. Monitor the effort with which you're practicing. Also, just notice the energy you bring to your practice. Is there some trying? Is there some striving? Is there some a sense of ease or struggle? Is the mind allowing the present moment to emerge? or is it making something happen? Just notice the way it is for you. Recognize this awareness. Feel a little drifty or a little unclear of what's actually going on, you can turn your attention to a chosen object like the breath or the posture and feel that. And know that breathing in is being known, or sitting is being known. And what else? Being known. Being careful not to get absorbed or focused on the object, just step back and recognize the awareness of sounds, the awareness of thoughts, the awareness of sensations. Remind yourself to remember to recognize the awareness in each moment. And just ask yourself, is awareness present? Onto something you could let it go or change your attitude of mind towards it. Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we do in practice. Is just kind of constantly monitoring what we're experiencing and how we're relating to it. Yeah. Sure.
And I can very much get the idea of being at peace and okay with the different states of mind and places in my life.
Yeah.
But feeling that everything is the same, and whether there's no preference and therefore they're the same, it feels very uncomfortable.
So you're saying, you said that you can see that there's some things you prefer over others, but you can be with either one equally. Yeah, okay. It's okay to recognize that. It's just that when you're non-preferred experience, like discomfort in the body, the spinach of, you know, bodily sensations, you know, when that happens, what does the mind do with it? Does the mind get kind of fretful or just kind of like impatient? Or do you just think, if I try harder, I won't have to eat that spinach or something like that? Yeah, we're not trying to make it be the same, you know. We're not trying to deny differences, so to speak, but to recognize that there are differences, different kinds of experiences, and we do have different relationships to them. So in the course of practice, we sometimes ask, well, what am I experiencing? Well, I'm experiencing spinach or, you know, cake, whatever you're experiencing. And then ask yourself, well, what is my relationship to it? Or what is the relationship of the mind to this experience? The mind likes it, it doesn't like it, it's kind of confused by it, it's bored by it, it's excited by it, it's, you know, chagrined by it, it's fearful of it. That's another state of mind to pay attention to. And then when you recognize those, the quality of the relationship to the experience, can you be with it? Can you just be with that experience? Can you let your irritation be there? Can you let the anger? Can you let the boredom? Can you let the disappointment? Can you be with that experience too? Because then we're into not just the physical experience or the thoughts, but we're into the minds, the emotional relationship to experience. And this too is where we want to pay attention. You want to comment on it?
Or you create tuning.
Yeah.
If I understand correctly, the commentary was about some future situation that you might be facing. I'm not sure if I heard you.
It was more like, okay, I'm just a present situation, and then I'm trying to, my mind was trying to figure out how it was for now. So there is a part of me that would think about positive outcomes, that it was more fantasizing. And then when I realized that, then I started to think about the negative outcomes. So it was more like a scenario kind of thing. And,
I guess what I'm inclined to ask is, it seems like there were a couple times when the commentary was happening where you noticed what was happening. Is that right?
Yes.
What was that like in that moment where you kind of noticed what was happening?
Well, I realized that none of that was happening for real. This is all a scenario kind of preparation for, well, A can happen. So I'm kind of thinking of if A would happen, how that would feel, or B would happen, how that would feel. Right. And then none of those
really happen. Right. Well, it sounds like that's actually a kind of a bit of an insight you know, just recognizing that. And I think our minds are so deeply conditioned to the unknown can be very threatening, right? The mind and the conceptual mind wants to know, we want to know outcomes, how it's going to unfold. And I think that our minds have numerous ways of trying to fill in, you know, the unknown. And one way we can do that is to, you know, potentially come up with fantasies or try to kind of predict the future. And I think, you know, you just do what you can to continually come back and notice, oh, okay, this is just the thought process playing out. You know, there's not an inherent reality, you know, embedded in this thought process. It's just a potentiality, you know, and when that can be noticed, the weightiness of the thoughts can dissipate a bit.
If we had to live out all of the futures we've planned for ourselves, do you know how long that would take? Lifetimes. We would have to spend lifetimes living out all of those fantasies. So it's better that we recognize, oh, this is just a fantasy. This is just, as Fan said, this is just a potential. And just realize it's not happening now. Other comments, questions, or experiences? You know, the more we can become aware of what's going on, the less kind of victimized we are by it, or the less jerked around we are by it. But what we're not aware of really has a lot of power over our mind. And so as we practice awareness, gradually, or I should say initially, very gross thoughts and fantasies and comments and judgments become apparent. But as we keep paying attention, we settle down into the mind a little further. We just kind of peel off layers of commentary, you might say, of things that the mind is saying or believing or assuming or hoping for or expecting. And the quieter the mind, or I should say the more continuously aware we can be, the more we will see of them. And the more we see, the less jerked around, the less manipulated by these unseen forces in the mind. And in this way, we become much more aware, much more balanced, have a lot more accurate appraisal of the current situation, whatever we find ourselves in. And from that, can make better decisions. If we don't know what's going on in our mind, How do we make decisions? Well, we just make them impulsively, or we make them out of deeply conditioned habits. We're not really dealing with the situation that's actually existing because we're not in touch with it. So, awareness is really essential for making skillful decisions, appraising the situation and then making skillful decisions in life. Yeah.
Just your use of the word skillful.
Yeah.
And I think I get confused about
I'll comment on a piece of it, and I think I'll let Steve fill in some of the gaps, but I think, you know, Steve has been asking that question, you know, multiple times to everyone, where he, you know, one of you will maybe explain what your experience was, and he'll ask, is that okay, right? And I think one way to understand that question is, it can, if the answer is no, right, it's not okay, this experience is not okay, just in answering that, it can automatically kind of direct you towards the attitude of mind that's there, that's maybe not so skillful, if that makes sense, right? Because if we say, if the answer is yes, and say, is it okay? yes, it's okay, and that's coming from a genuine and true place, it would likely imply an attitude of, you know, openness and acceptance and relaxation, right? If the answer is no, it doesn't mean anything's wrong with the practice, but it will direct, the awareness will naturally go to, well, what is the no highlighting? And that very act of becoming aware of that unskillful attitude that the no is pointing to, that's reestablishing right attitude, right? So by continually knowing and recognizing what the unskillful attitude is, so resistance or making something, trying to make something happen, noticing that repeatedly in and of itself is cultivating the right attitude. So all one needs to do is continually notice what the no is referring to. So it's no indication on, you know, how skillful the practice is if the answer is yes, and this is okay, or no, it's not. But it's more important just to have awareness of what the yes or the no is pointing to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Questions? Yeah.
More tactical question, but one I've been thinking about the past couple weeks. And that's really around the amount of time we choose to sit.
Sure.
And I guess I'm not really asking you to prescribe how long we should sit, but just thinking, you know, there's days when I don't really prioritize meditation and maybe I sit for 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, heck, there's days I don't sit at all. But, you know, other days where I sit for longer, in my mind, I feel like, oh, 30 minutes, that was like really a solid meditation.
Sure.
And I think, you know, I think a lot of that is ego and feeling satisfied with myself. But I also noticed, like, the first night here, we didn't start at 5 or 10 minutes, we started at half an hour. So I guess I'm just curious, what are some of the criteria, or what are you thinking about when you decide how long to sit for?
Okay, so this is a common question. You know, how long should I sit? I would ask you, why do you sit? Why do you sit?
I think...
Because your teacher told you to?
I think to get out of my head, to, you know, find some ease and peace in this busy.
Okay. So to get out of your head, to find some ease and peace. That's good motivation. Okay. Is that what you find when you actually sit?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Okay.
Is it when you sit longer, you get more ease and peace? Or when you sit shorter, you get less ease and peace? Or does it make a difference?
Depends.
It's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some days you can sit for 5 minutes and just drop in, and it's like, wow, great, okay, that's good. Other days you can sit for a half hour and it's totally restless, agitated, no ease, no peace. Right? It's just, we can't predict what it's going to be like when we sit. So, if we have this expectation that, oh, when I sit, it should be like this, I should get peaceful. Well, that's not likely to happen all the time. So, in one sense, I want to say it doesn't matter really how long you sit. What matters is, can you bring this interest in being aware to whatever you're doing. Yeah, it's good to have a habit of formal practice, whether it's 10 minutes a day or 2 10-minute sessions a day or a half hour in the morning and a half hour in the evening. It's great. In some sense, we could say the more the better, because it just gives the mind just a little more familiarity with awareness, and it's kind of like letting go of the stuff that's kind of preoccupying the mind. We say, you know, sitting every day is like, you know, in your kitchen. At the end of the day, you kind of got to pick up the dishes and put away the stuff and sweep off the crumbs and kind of get it ready for breakfast in the morning, right? So every day we just kind of tidy up the kitchen counter and sweep it off. right? So that the next day we can have a clean counter. Well, sitting for a little bit each day is a way of kind of cleaning the crumbs off the mind, right? If we don't sit at all, or we don't practice mindful thought, the crumbs just keep accumulating, and there's all kinds of debris gets stuck in the mind, right? So even doing a little bit is helpful. But sometimes we can't do a very good cleaning of the kitchen. But every season, we have to do spring cleaning, fall cleaning, you know, because things accumulate, right? So it's good to do a daily practice, but it's also good to really do some, you know, days of practice, or whether it's a weekend or a retreat or something like that, to really give the mind a good cleansing, if you will, in that way. So if we try to make a commitment to sit more than we can do daily in a comfortable way, we're just going to make ourselves stressed and tense, right? So we don't want to say we're going to sit for a half hour every day if you don't think you can find a half hour, or if it's just going to make you that much more stressed or agitated. So I wouldn't do that. But I would make a commitment to get in the sitting posture every day. And then just see how long you sit. Might be for 5 minutes, might be for 10, might be for half hour. But just sit. And then see how long it takes. Or see how long you can sit. Other comments, questions? How many of you are doing a daily practice? Yeah. I was going to say, why aren't you? But I don't want to get to be kind of like, you should be sitting. That's not the right attitude to bring to it, because it's not only in sitting. What we're doing is we're practicing awareness while sitting, awareness while walking, awareness while talking, awareness while listening, awareness while driving. If you can expand your idea, even that, oh, awareness can, we can practice awareness doing anything, then we don't get this kind of wrong assumption that it's only through sitting that we can practice awareness. We can be aware doing anything, but it takes practice, you know, to do that. You know, otherwise we just get lost in the story, we get lost in the activity, and we're not really noticing or recognizing what is going on at the time it's going on. And that's what awareness is. Recognizing what's going on while it's happening. Any other comments you want to make? Questions you want to have? Yeah.
As somebody who's new to this practice and getting used to or starting to recognize that sensation of awareness or be able to observe it, mm-hmm. That sort of thing you're talking about, the emotional reaction to it, either, you know, when you sort of, you're aware that you're aware and you just, yeah, and you have this positive emotional thought, and then you sort of lose it. And then you're like, ah, oh, dang. And then you feel bad, and then maybe you go back into it, but then you get sleepy, and then you've lost it again. And so I'm sort of struggling, I guess, with, as I'm, you know, becoming more aware of that, you know, of being aware, it almost, you know, makes it more difficult. I'm sort of realizing an attachment to it, you know, or like an expectation of it, and that is maintaining it more difficult. And so I'm wondering if you have any suggestions, or if that's just to be expected. Time practice will help.
Wouldn't it be nice if your best meditation, you could always count on it being there? I think recognizing when you're aware is important. Recognizing that you cannot make it happen is also important, because we can try, we can say, mind, be mindful, right? And it may or may not, you know. So we want to watch our attitude of mind that is demanding or expecting that just because I do this, something familiar, then it's going to happen. It may or may not. So when there is clear recognition of awareness, know that. When there's not, know that. Because that also is awareness. Sometimes awareness is very clear, and we're aware that we're aware. Sometimes we're just aware, but not aware that we're aware. Right? That really, we can be aware of sensations in the body, but we're not really kind of recognizing the awareness. Sometimes I use a three-dimensional instruction. Here's the object that's arising in the present moment, and here's the awareness of it. Right? Sometimes the object arises and there's awareness of it. The object arises and there's awareness of it. Sometimes we get focused on the object and we get lost in the object. So we're feeling the object. We're kind of embedded in the object, but there's no recognition of the awareness. So rather than being object-oriented, like breath, 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 breathing in, breathing out, as an object, we want to emphasize the awareness. Oh, breathing in is being known. Breathing out is being known. Breathing in is being known. Or hearing sounds, being known. Thinking thoughts, being known. Feeling happy, being known. Feeling bored, being known. Being clear, being known. But it's the being known that we're cultivating here. The object, they're going to come and go, aren't they? So it's this that we want to be recognizing and paying attention to. But it's not always there. So, how do you feel when you don't recognize awareness?
I think it's maybe more like my feeling when I become aware that I was lost, or and then that sort of discouragement or frustration that is more sort of the thing that I notice. More so than the, I guess the point is when I'm not aware, I'm noticing it. So.
Okay, right. Now, isn't it interesting? So when we're practicing awareness, and we're aware for a while, and then we space out. We forget what we're doing, we space out, we get lost in thought, and for a while, we're not aware. When awareness arises again, shouldn't we really be happy? Like, wow, here it is again. I'm happy, great. Right? Because that's what's actually happening in the present moment. But instead, we often look at, oh, I was just not aware for a minute or two or five or an hour. I was not aware. And we get bummed out about that. Rather than be, kind of like, not necessarily gleeful, but at least recognizing, oh, at least I'm back. What if, contemplate this, what if you really hadn't heard about the instructions for mindful or being mindful, and you went into a train of thought where you're not being mindful and never came out? What if you never recognized awareness again? You'd just be lost in your story, right? So any moment that you come out of your story and recognize it as just, oh, just being aware of, oh, that's just a story, that's just a thought, that's just a fantasy, that's just, is like a moment of really being in your life, being aware of your life. When you're lost in thought, you don't know what's going on. So we should actually congratulate ourselves. Oh, I'm aware. Well, there's awareness here. Great. Rather than, oh, bummer. I was just not aware for 5 minutes or whatever. We should give ourselves some credit. Yay, I'm back. Yeah.
Something about be careful of the why. Like, for example, I can see the object, like, okay, I'm not in self, and I see
Why was losing so? I'm aware of the dhyana. Why was I losing that so? Like, why this is happening? Like, what's your suggestion for, I don't know, when you start commenting over, okay, I'm aware I have this so, and then you start kind of thinking, like, why this has such a big impression that it will come back? And so,
whenever you notice whatever kind of thinking you notice, recognize it. There's many kinds of, just like, you know, when we feel different sensations in the body, we can recognize heat, vibration, pressure, pulling, stretching, aching, tightness, tension, throbbing, pulsing, tingling, many different things. Same with thoughts. Oh, there's questioning, like, why am I thinking like this? Questioning. Or there's narrating, as if you're telling the story of your life to someone else. Now I'm doing this, now I'm doing that, now I'm paying attention, now I'm scratching my, you know, shoulder, now I'm sneezing, now I'm... Or there's trying to figure things out, trying to explain, sometimes we're rehearsing. So just to become familiar with the different activities of thought, really helpful. Because you don't... It takes you out of the story. It takes you out of the content of your thought into recognizing the process of the thinking. You know what I mean? So instead of being caught in the story, the content, there's an awareness of, oh, this kind of thinking is happening, rather than being lost in the content of it. This is what awareness is, being recognizing, oh, this kind of thinking is happening. I know, we want to answer that question, don't we? Why am I thinking this way? But in this practice, if we're just noticing what's actually happening in the present moment, what's happening? What is happening in that moment? Questioning is happening. Or why, I say lying is happening. Why am I thinking this way? That's what's happening. Rather than trying to answer the question why you're thinking that way, we just recognize, oh, that's questioning is happening in the mind. You see the difference? Yeah. You know, our time has gone by already. Seems like it goes quick.